The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The Major Spoilers podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Ashley.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, return once more to the Weird Wild West with the Sixth Gun. Explore the cosmos with your very own symbiote. Seek out clues with the best teen detectives of all. And whatever you do, stay out of the dark alleys with the vampires and the other things. Mr. and Mrs. Spoilerite, we're here to talk to you about the MSP Avengers Initiative. Get your shield, your hammer, or your exoskeleton, because the Major Spoilers podcast is on the Coulson impression.
Welcome to issue 719 of the Major Spoilers podcast. I'm so happy that you are joining us this week. Some new listeners. It's really surprising a bunch of people suddenly jumping on board. I'm really glad that all of the new listeners are here. If you don't know how this show works, we are here to entertain you, provide commentary on things like news, give you reviews on comic books and other things, and dive into a trade paperback each and every week. And don't forget our poll of the week. It's all coming up. And we got
a four-way nerd triumvirate.
We've got an international group of podcasters here ready to talk. So let us get into some news.
Four different languages fluently.
Let us get into some news. Three stories this week. Logan does really well at the box office. What does this mean for R-rated films? What is going on with Magneto? And you get a Venom, and you get a Venom, and you get a Venom. Let's spin this wheel of destiny and see where it lands. Oh, looking right there. Everyone is going to get a Venom. Marvel released a solicitation for Edge of Venomverse. That's right, Edge of Venomverse, and it's coming our way in June. Edge of Venomverse unleashes sinister symbiotes across the Marvel Universe, wreaking havoc, or I'm sorry, untold havoc and wanton destruction. Featuring some of the most popular characters from March's Venomized variant program, this in-continuity series brings you deadly new Venom combinations, giving fans dream matchups for some of the comic's hottest creators. The Marvel Universe is about to play host to an army of Venomized heroes, but whose side will they be on?
Did you say incontinent series?
Incontinent series. No, an in-continuity series. So a couple of questions that have popped up on this. Obviously, we're getting these Venomized covers, but it also sounds like we're getting a bunch of, like, Captain America Venom and Ghost Rider Venom and the Multiple Man Venom.
Can I ask a really rude question?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Does anybody care?
So yes. That is... That is the question that has to be asked. Now, we have talked before. Some people have asked, is this going to be just a Spider-Man series like we saw with Spider-Island? Or is this going to be an entire company-wide event? What is this going to be? And when people started asking me those questions, it brought me back to a conversation that we had a couple of weeks ago about event fatigue and how we're just being dumped on with one event after another. And Chris Wilson, who actually works at a comic book store, wrote in and he says, hey, I really enjoyed the episode where you guys were talking about this. Just to weigh in on event discussion, there may be event fatigue, but honestly, that is not stopping people from reading them. So many times I've heard from customers, I'm getting tired of these events. I'm going to have to stop reading them. My response always is, we can drop that title for you if you like. And their response is, no, I'm going to read it and check it out. Six issues later, they're still buying it. Civil War II number two sales actually beat number one for us. Some like the event, but the number of times I hear complaints about the comic while people continue to buy it is kind of shocking. It's this mindset that comic readers have I bought a few issues, need to finish the story, or I'll just wait and see if it gets better until the cycle is broken. Marvel will continue to put these out because it's still making them money. Speak with your wallet, people. So in answer to Ashley's question, I think the answer is somebody cares.
I guess
This is the thing. There are weird pockets of the universe that want more Venom. There are people out there who clamor for more Venom. And I say this as someone who, you know, wanders around in strange places like the back roads of TV tropes or the Marvel wikis, where people are like, oh my God, why don't we have more Venom? Now, I have no use for Venom. Venom to me is just like the Punisher. He's a Spider-Man villain that people keep miswriting. But the people who love him, love him. And the people who can tell you with a straight face that Spider-Man 3 is the best Spider-Man movie because of Venom. These people want to see Edge of Venom verse. I don't know, you know, that may not be 70 scribillion people, but I think that it's going to be enough to make this book at least noteworthy. It's not, I don't think it's going to be Civil War II material, but I think it's going to be an upper tier book every issue that comes out.
Do we think though it's even going to be like Edge of Spider-Verse level?
Yeah, I think it is. Do you remember New Avengers when Bendis relaunched New Avengers? And there was this big deal. Yeah. And it's all like, oh, here's the Sentry and here. Ooh, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden they're like, boom, Venom bomb. The sales on that Venom issue were higher than issue one of that same series because, ooh, it's Wolverine wearing a Venom. And it
I get it. It's a good look. It's just like The Amazing Spider-Spawn is a good book. I guess I just, my concern would have arisen from, Venom solo series traditionally don't last.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time.
I'd be surprised at the permeation of it.
We had, what's his name? Flash Rogers, right?
Thompson.
Flash Thompson.
I think he's got a solo series right now. And they're trying to like peg him as like reformed bully guy.
Venom Space Knight, I think, is the last Venom series. Oh, I don't know if it's over yet.
How is that a thing?
Venom was a member of the Guardians of the Galaxy.
I know.
Flash Thompson. That makes sense, though. I mean, Venom is an alien being.
Venom is an alien. Half of him is an alien. That's about the same as Nova, actually.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That's true.
Venom
fair.
Makes
Very
more sense
fair.
As a member of the Guardians than Iron Man ever did, because Iron Man was like, yeah, I know how to spell space.
Or Kitty Pryde.
Kitty Pryde, I can see. Kitty Pryde just goes wherever her boyfriend named
Intangibility.
Peter is.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
wherever her intangibility takes her.
That's actually her fourth Peter, depending
Lockheed.
On how you count.
If Lockheed is an alien, right, technically?
Lockheed is an alien.
Yeah. So I don't know. I can see the appeal of Venom, and I think that when after Secret Wars, so was it Secret War or Secret Wars 2, when the Black Spider-Man showed up?
Secret Wars.
Whenever, yeah, when we started to get this whole, hey, this suit is doing something while you're sleeping, Peter Parker kind of thing. I think there was something kind of interesting about that. But I don't know. It seemed at the time like a one hit wonder or, you know, a one note story. Yet he keeps coming back time and time again. Rodrigo, what's going on with Venom that makes him this lasting character, you know, 40 years later, 30 years later?
I mean, Venom's got a lot going for it. First off, for the people that experienced Venom in real time, it comes from a really strong storyline, right? It's like Spider-Man gets his new costume. The new costume starts kind of changing him. He's acting up or whatever, you know, like years after he's been wearing it.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
kind of write this plot to go along with the costume. And then out of that, we get Venom. And Venom is a dark mirror to Spider-Man as far as powers. But it's done in a different way, right? In a lot of ways, you know, your dark mirrors tend to be like blood relations or something like that. But it's like the alien symbiote, like hatred for Spider-Man is interesting because he's sad that Peter Parker doesn't want to be his friend anymore and like crush people to death with it. Now, that was 10,000 years ago. Venom has gone through like 6 or 7 iterations since then. There's that time when he was like hanging out in San Francisco and just being a cool guy. I mean, people love Venom, I think principally because he looks good. It's an interesting looking character.
Yeah.
Since then, we've gotten a lot of Venom like characters, not just from Marvel, but in general.
Wasn't Carnage like the immediate derivative?
Yep. Carnage. I mean, and then there's Toxin, who was Carnage's child. And
yeah, this, what we're seeing right now is, this is like the third symbiote crisis, right? There was like basically once Venom started getting popular, that spun out into like separation anxiety and then Maximum Carnage.
yeah.
Right.
And during Maximum Carnage, there were like six symbiotes running around plus like four goblins. Like that was like Spider-Man at its like nuttiest, right? It's like three different Spider-Mans, six different Venoms, if you count Carnage, three or four goblins and a lady named Shriek.
And a partridge in a pear tree.
Pretty much. So yeah, it's like we've been through this. Like I see this and it really reminds me of a Maximum Carnage type situation. But I think what this is kind of this editorial relaxation of things of people just being like, you know what, let's just kind of go for it. This is the sort of thing that would have been a what if story in the 80s or 90s, you know, but now they're just like, yep, let's do it. Everybody's Spider-Man or everybody's Venom or everybody's the Hulk.
Everybody's, you know? Iron Man.
Yep. So this is just kind of like the let's throw it at the wall and see what sticks kind of mentality. And out of this, we might get a new, you know, people might be like, oh man, I never thought that that Venom Ghost Rider would be such a cool thing. Let's have like six more issues of this before it all like gets flushed down the toilet.
Right. And we can look at this and say, oh my God, what is this? How can this be cool? I think everyone here has at least some appreciation of the latest series featuring Spider-Gwen.
Yeah.
Which seemed equally ludicrous when they announced it. That's but true. The execution was so good and entertaining that they made it work. I think the most fascinating thing for me is that there are clearly two Wolverines in that picture.
I know. I saw it too.
So once a lady Wolverine, it's X-23.
Right. Oh, X-23.
One's Laura. So the other one.
Three Wolverines right now. Ooh. If you count her little clone that she said, Gabrielle.
Yeah.
Gabriella, her little sister.
But that may be the actual corpse of Wolverine dug up with a Venom all over him.
Yeah, maybe that's how we get Wolverine back.
He'll be back.
Well, they'll all be back. It's not like death is ever permanent.
You know what would be great? If you do get a symbiote Wolverine, his catchphrase gets really thrown out of whack because it doesn't make a lot of sense to say we're the best there are at what we do.
We're the best there are at eating your brain.
So is this going to sell well? Can you make a prediction based on just the title Edge of Venomverse? Is this going to be Venom? Maybe this is Venoms from all the multiverses, from all the spider verses coming together.
I'm going to say fair to Midland. I'm going to say upper mid card. It's going to be the Miz level, to make a reference to sports that none of us actually watch. If you were to look at it in terms of a movie, what's a movie that's like 80% of the way to genius?
Real genius.
Interstellar.
Interstellar. There you go.
Yeah, Interstellar is probably a good example. Yeah.
An Interstellar or maybe a Prometheus, depending on whether you hated Prometheus. I don't know.
A Prometheus. But Prometheus may be a better, or maybe the upcoming Aliens Covenant might be a better tie into Edge of Venomverse.
I haven't seen it yet, you know. So
if you
know.
Watch the trailer, it's just meh.
But there were multiple Fassbenders.
Multiple Fassbenders.
There you go.
I'm all in.
So let me ask you, Ashley, would you be interested in reading issue one of this thing, Edge of Venomverse?
No, but I don't like Venom because I'm not a 14-year-old boy.
Well, that was the other question. Is Venom
just speaking
a
in broad
more
stereotypes, of course.
Yeah, but I mean, in that broad stereotypes, though, is Venom more of a teenage boy kind of character that he would appeal to, or is it appealing to all ages? I mean, I said I can see the appeal of Venom, but I have no interest in reading this.
Yeah, I would say he is, in the same way that Deadpool and Wolverine and Grifter and Batman are. Like, there's not that those characters can't transcend, but that is the market. It's like it's your hot topic crowd. Mm-hmm.
That's where your bread and butter is. Yeah.
Rodrigo, any interest in reading number one of this, or the first issue, or whatever this thing is?
I mean, sure. You know, there's something about the Venom look that you can apply it to pretty much anything. I'm sure a lot of thought went into like what aspects of a costume were being Venomized and what aspects were being kept. So from a design standpoint, I am interested in it. From a story standpoint, I don't think it's going to be very good, but I basically have bought terrible comics just for the art. You guys ever read Kaboom?
Oh yeah.
Like not the actual comic. Yeah, that wasn't great, but it looked great.
Yeah, Jeff Matsuda. What about you, Matthew? Any interest in reading this?
I think, as always, I fall back on the words of the great philosopher Winston Zeddemore, who said, if there's a steady paycheck in it, I'll believe anything you want. So if I review it, I will review it for major spoilers. So that, you know, at the very least, I can feel like I'm doing a service to let you guys know that it's wonderful and you should check it out, or that you've destroyed a few more brain cells that I didn't have to spare because I'm old.
We have about a week and a half before the the June solicits come out. We'll find out more then and we'll know more then. But right now, that's what they've been teasing us with, the Edge of Venomverse.
Edge of Venom.
I'm really happy that I first encountered this in written form, like as part of the show notes for today's show, because if somebody walked up to me and said Edge of Venomverse, I would not understand what they were saying to me.
Yeah.
True. Yeah.
Edge of Venomverse has many sons, and many sons has Edge of Venomverse.
All right, listeners, you can head over to majorspoilers.com. You can check out these stories and a whole lot more. And if you're one of our Major Spoilers VIP members or our Patreon members, you can find out what's going on with Magneto and hear our thoughts about that in the bonus feed. You can find more at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Thank you so much for everyone who has signed up. We really appreciate your support. It's the only way that this show and all of the shows and websites and other things that we put out at Major Spoilers can continue. So patreon.com/majorspoilers. Let's jump into some reviews. Let's check out Ashley with New Superman number 9. It's out this week from DC Comics.
Oh, guys, I love New Superman, and I feel like nobody is talking about it.
I do like it.
So this issue is out this week, and if you haven't read New Superman, it is basically like this jerky jerk kid named Kenan Kong in China, in Shanghai, gets Superman powers. And he gets adopted by a secret Chinese organization who is building the Justice League of China. And he's got a really cool Wonder Woman of China with a green outfit and a lasso, and Fat Batman of China, who is my absolute favorite character. I love him so much, and I'm only 99% sure I know how to pronounce his actual Chinese name. And the best thing that ever happens in this issue is that Fat Chinese Batman has a Robin robot. He's amazing. Cool. And he's like, he's red and yellow and green, and he's slightly useless until they get into battle. But he's the coolest thing ever, and he kind of looks like Eva, and I really... DC Collectibles, I need you to make this for me. And just please do me solid. So if you are reading the DC Superman Rebirth storylines, and if you're not, then you're making a giant mistake because it's the best it's been in years. You will know that Lex Luthor is back in true Luthor wannabe Superman form. And in the Adventures of New Superman, he has appeared in Shanghai to make a deal in order to convince Kenan Kong, I think, to go back to Metropolis with him and help him be super. And this issue kind of unpacks all of that. There's a really great reveal of just how much Luthor understands, particularly when they're in China, and who he can most take advantage of in order to get what he wants, basically. And Luthor always gets what he wants. So I'll leave you to ruminate on that. This is also the issue. In the last couple issues, we've been unpacking more of what New Superman is and the way his powers work. And a lot of it is tied to the idea of your chi and the movement of energy through your bodies, like you're used to thinking of in traditional Eastern medicine. And if that's difficult for you, it's like when you're a firebender and you're trying to figure out which part of your body to control the fire with. And they've introduced the, I believe it's the hexagon. oh, it's neither hexagon or an octagon. I don't have it in front of me. I'm so sorry if I'm getting it wrong, but the, you know, his shield is not in the traditional shield shape. Right. It's in, I think it's a hexagon.
It's the I Ching.
Yes.
Symbol, yeah.
And it's a very important image in like Chinese spiritualism, and medicine. And we're starting to introduce how the more parts of his body and his chi that he can unlock, the more powerful he can become. So this issue also deals with Kenan trying to unlock his super hearing and how sometimes he can do that, but it really has to focus. So if he gets smacked upside the head, then it goes a little wonky and his inner ear gets off balance. Oh. So I really like this issue because Kenan's been a massive dick for a long time, which can be really funny. But given the recent death of his parents, as happens to all good superheroes, he's finally starting to grow up and develop a little bit. So it's interesting to see this different way to look at the Superman power sets and how you have to be a good and balanced person in order to be able to harness every different ability. And I like the idea, if you sort of meta extrapolate that like Clark Kent is good and balanced. And that's why he was able to tap into them from a very early age, but Kenan is not good or balanced. So it's more of a struggle for him. Plus Robin robots, plus we are going to see a big showdown with the new Superman and either Lex or a really cool traditional DC Comics character. And there, for obvious reasons, hasn't been a ton of crossover since they've been in Shanghai. So I like that this issue is setting up a lot of really cool stuff. That's probably going to wrap up around issue 12. But if you're not reading New Superman, I don't know if I'm going to appeal you enough to pick it up because it's a really cool examination of the mythology that we all know. It expands the world in an interesting way. And it's one of the books that DC Rebirth really took a chance on. Mm-hmm. So I think it's an important title to support more than even Superman or Action Comics, which are also really great right now. So I'm going to give it 5 out of 5 because I just think it was so charming, so beautiful, and so interesting. And it does a really interesting thing with superhero mythology and comic book storytelling that I don't think we're getting enough of in mainstream comic book stories.
Mm-hmm. This is also written by Jean Luan Yang, who is the, I guess has been named the young adult representative writer.
He won the MacArthur Genius Grant last year. So you got it going on.
And he just was named something else just recently too. And I like the fact that he's bringing in the Eastern mysticism philosophy into how Superman is getting his powers, which is kind of cool too.
With the Spider-Man spelling.
There you go. Let us jump to another book that's coming out this week. Vampirilla number 1. From Paul Cornell and Jimmy Broxton and Dynamite Entertainment. I reviewed issue 0 on the podcast a while ago. Rodrigo, what's going on in issue number 1?
In issue number 1, Vampirella finds herself. She's been asleep for 1,000 years or something and finds herself in what in the current, not today's current, but the current of that time, in at least a city that is now where Los Angeles was. It's interesting times. Lots of dildos around. So that's cool.
Real dildos or people that are just really dumb and you don't like them?
No, actual ones, but also that.
Okay.
This comic, I swear I went back and just had to triple check that this comic wasn't made seriously in the 80s. This, not for any sort of quality judgment, just because this comic has this vibe that was in kind of 80s, sort of proto Vertigo stuff.
Yeah, I kind of mentioned that when we did Zero, is that it kind of felt that way. And it's really weird in the art. It's trippy and cool, but it's... It definitely is a product of a different time.
Yeah, it has that kind of I don't know, not necessarily, it really looks like, it does. It looks like a particularly colorful kind of a Sandman thing. both the art and the themes involved, because it's like in the future, everything's debaucherous and everything is scandalous. So therefore nothing is scandalous. So in order to stand out, like Vampirella dresses like more conservatively than she normally does, you know, with her little like one piece mm-hmm. thong mm-hmm. thing. It's pretty trippy. Really, that's the best thing that I can say for it, is that this really encapsulates like kind of weirdly a different era in comics. This has sort of like your like early like Garth Ennis kind of like vibe to it. In just kind of this like shock of sex and rock and roll kind of thing, while also having vampire ladies. It's really not for me. Like, I'm not like, I got through this and I wasn't like grossed out, or I wasn't like off put by all the strap-ons all over the place. But it's kind of a story that I think is looking at themes that I'm not all that interested in, like this idea of like in the future sex will be so sexy that nothing is sexy anymore, is not really like a philosophy that I follow. Like I don't think that's what we're headed for, and so a lot of this like dystopian future kind of rings weirdly hollow for me. There's a lot of supernatural stuff going on. That's interesting. It's interesting to see where that goes. So that did kind of hold my attention. But this first issue is kind of like, really just, I felt trying to like establish what this place is going to be like. And what it is like 80s dildo town.
Which is my second favorite Cody Cambria album.
Pretty much. So nothing wrong with that. I'm gonna give it 2.5 slices of meatloaf. I you know, it's just kind of not my bag. But yeah, if you liked, again, if you like sort of. I don't know. I want to say like Morrison's like independent stuff. Like if you like Garth Ennis, if you like sort of like that British wave of writers from the like in the 80s and early 90s, like you might want to check this out. But it's not for me.
All right. That's fair enough. I had a weird reaction to issue number 0. Yeah, so I can see where you're coming from.
Still hasn't cleared up.
No, it really hasn't. It really, really hasn't. Hey, also out from Dynamite Comics this week is a book you will want to go and pick up right away. It's Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys, The Big Lie, number 1, written by Anthony Del Cole with art by Werther Del Edera. I believe is how you say the last name, but holy cow. If you like, so here's the thing. When did the Hardy Boys come out? Like the 1920s and 30s? Is that when they first appeared?
Oh, I want to say the 30s, yeah.
Yeah, and I think some of the characters, even Nancy Drew, maybe a little bit sooner than that. But those books were written for kids, and yes, you know, taking something like Riverdale, you know, Archie, and turning it into Riverdale, which is a deep, dark, you know, TV series, has its appeal. And I think taking the Hardy Boys and making it a more modern true detective tale is fascinating.
So the Hardy Boys are Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson?
Or who are the guys that do the Supernatural show? That's probably more akin to it because they're still in high school. They're still high school kids. But this is in modern day. And a lot of this is told in a police procedural because they're in the middle of an interrogation room. You can find the sneak peek of this over at majorspoilers.com. But their father has, quote unquote, committed suicide because he was the boys believe that he was framed for being a corrupt official. And the small town that they lived in had a lot of backlash. The boys lost their popularity. No one likes them. It was too much for the father. He committed suicide. But the Hardy Boys believe that he did not commit suicide. And the police believe that the Hardy Boys pulled the Menendez brothers on his dad, on their dad. And so this starts in an interrogation room where they're being interrogated, and we get the story of the things leading up to the father's suicide in flashback. And the Bobbsey twins are in this.
You're kidding.
No, I am not. And the other, who's the company that put this out? The Shellhouster?
The Stratemeyer Syndicate.
There's another Stratemeyer Syndicate detective kid that shows up in this book as well, including Nancy Drew.
Dave Porter?
No, it's the...
Ranger?
No, it's the black kid detective one. Tom, I forgot his name. I don't have the book open in front of me.
Swift?
No. Well, maybe it is. But I looked into this and I was like, holy crap, the Bobbsey twins. Let me find out the relationship between this and the Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew, and found out about the publisher that was releasing this. And Anthony Del Cole has worked these characters into this bigger universe. And as soon as Joe is saying, yes, I went to the Bobbsey twins party, I was like, oh no. It was really kind of a nice surprise to see that pop in. And then you get into this tale that's not, it's not seedy. It's not like a Titan Comics Hard Case Crime imprint where it's really dark and really disturbing and really yuck. This feels like it's in the vein of Riverdale, but with a really well-told mystery. And this first issue is all backstory, very much like the first episode of Riverdale was kind of exposing who everyone was. This one ends with the Hardy Boys meeting up with Nancy Drew, and we find out that the tale that they've been telling the police is something that Nancy knew was going to happen, and they've kind of colluded with one another to get their story straight so that they can get the police going off in one direction, and the three of them can get down to business and really investigate the death of their father. It is really good, and the art is fantastic. It jumps between three different styles depending on how the story is going. And I was just really impressed by this. This was the, by far, of all the comics that I've read this week, this is the best comic that I've read this week. And I've actually already read the Action Comics or Superman, where we reveal who is the fake Mr. Kent.
Action Comics.
Yeah, Action Comics. This is even better than that, I think. I'm giving this 5 out of 5 slices of meatloaf. If you like noir stories, if you like really well-structured police procedurals, if you like a really well-told detective tale, Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys, The Big Lie, #1, definitely is going to want to be on your must-read list this week. And it's not like they're warping, anything about the characters. It's just they're setting up the characters in a modern tale. What if the Hardy Boys were around today? It's just like when people went nuts over the Hardy Boys in the 70s, right?
Yeah.
This is just
Chet
like
Morton
this.
Won't be into ventriloquism. He'll be totally hooked on MySpace.
Yes. And what's his name? Parker. What was the other guy's actor's name? Parker.
Sean Cassidy and Parker Stevenson.
Yeah. Parker Stevenson. This is just like the 70s. Just an updated version of these guys. And it's really, really well told. Go check it out, guys. I really dug it.
It's that Stratemeyer extended universe.
Yeah. It's really weird, man. I think you would get a kick out of this, Matthew, just because they keep dragging in the different characters. And I'm pretty sure it is Tom Swift is the...
When Jupiter Jones arrives, call me.
Okay. Well, who knows? Might happen. Let's jump ahead a couple of weeks and see about a book that's coming out from Archie Comics, Jughead the Hunger. This is from the Archie Horror imprint.
It is. Written by Frank Thierry, art by Michael Walsh and Jack Morelli. That's Walsh, not Wash. I'm from the Midwest, and sometimes I slur my L's. Jughead the Hunger. All right, first of all, this is a book that comes out in 2 weeks, so I'm not going to tell you too much and spoilerate everything because that would be rude. But more importantly, you have to keep in mind that much as Afterlife with Archie is its own track and Chilling Adventures of Sabrina is its own track, Jughead the Hunger takes place in a world where Archie crosses over with horror tropes, but it is not of or tied to those other books. It is its own track.
Ah, okay,
and
good.
The Sabrina book seems to take place in an alternate 1965-ish, and the Afterlife with Archie book kind of takes place in a modern setting. Jughead actually feels like it takes place about 20 years ago. And of course, in the solicitations, as Jughead Jones has always had an insatiable appetite. But what if it came from a sinister place? And it totally does.
Eat at Arby's.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Stop that. You are not a parody Twitter account. But this book does, well, it does something that a lot of comic books come to, a lot of companies, and it's not just comics, TV shows, movies. You get to a point where something hits really big. Afterlife with Archie was ridiculously popular and is very well done, even though it comes out once every 6 to 8 months when
quarterly.
The moon is blue.
It's like quarterly.
Yeah. And that's fine. I mean, I am willing to wait longer for a quality book. That doesn't necessarily mean that everybody is. Chilling Adventures of Sabrina is another book that is just amazing, but in a completely different way. The approach there is different. Jughead the Hunger feels very much of a piece with Afterlife with Archie, but not in the best ways, more in a how can we make this feel like sort of the same thing and get people really excited about Jughead horror. And I feel like, well, part of this, I will say this, I've never forgiven Frank Thierry for the 2007 incident where he took over Legion of Superheroes from Mark Waid. And that's a thing. You have a writer who comes to a property and writes their own style, as they should, but that style never really feels like either its own thing or a really skilled copy of what has gone before. So The Hunger really feels to me a lot like Afterlife with Archie 2.1. It's not necessarily an improvement. I do like the art, but once again, the art feels like it's consciously designed to look like Francesco Francavilla's work on Afterlife with Archie.
Is that the interior art or is it just the cover? Because he did do
the interior art.
Okay. All right. Because he did do a variant cover on that.
Yeah. Robert Hack also did one. I like the Hack a variant cover. There are a lot of clever conceits in here. And one thing in here that I feel is really brilliant is the thing that happens with Betty Cooper. When you get to the book, and you will read the book, you should totally read the book. I'm not saying don't read the book. I'm just saying there's a thing that happens with Betty Cooper that I'm like, yeah, it's 1997. There are moments in here that evoke one of Rodrigo's favorite movies, which makes perfect sense in context. There are a lot of scenes in here that feel like they should all come together and coalesce, but somehow never quite do. And I don't know if it's just a question of maybe it feels like they're trying a little too hard to work within that Afterlife with Archie successful template. I feel like the first couple of pages are very shocking, but they're shocking in a way that doesn't make you go, oh, it's a way that kind of makes you go, oh, you know, I'm not saying it's the most terrifying thing that's ever been done with Miss Grundy, because that's clearly having her be a cute teacher sleeping with 17-year-olds on TV. But I will say this, Jughead the Hunger, there's potential here. It is a one shot, so I don't know that they're going to do more in this particular reality. It is set up to do so if everybody loves it. I would say 2.5 slices of meatloaf, slightly above average book, certainly not something that grabbed me the way Afterlife or Chilling Adventures did, but still, I think worth the price of admission, worth checking out. If nothing else, there is a moment that longtime Riverdale readers will go, yeah, that person totally deserved that thing that happened.
Okay.
So
cool.
Again, it's a book.
All right. I will be picking up and reading it, just like you did. And we'll see how it goes. Thank you, Matthew, for that review. And Rodrigo and Ashley, thank you for your reviews. And listeners, you can head over to majorspoilers.com and you can check out all the reviews and news and all the other stuff that we have over there, including the Major Spoilers Poll of the Week.
Poll of the Week, week.
Matthew threatened last week and I delivered. What do we call Wolverine fans? And I think we narrowed it down to two and only two possibilities. Loganites or Wolvies? Rodrigo, say you?
Not Wolverweenies?
No, not Wolverweenies, no.
I Well, on the one hand, they're both stupid.
Yes, and, of course. They're supposed to be. That's the whole point.
And
congratulations.
I forgot. There's really no other hand. I'm gonna go with Loganites.
Okay.
Because that seems the most likely one to be confused with something realistic or potentially like socially important. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as long as people don't know exactly what you're talking about, you can like see somebody walk by on the street and be like, hey, I bet that guy's a Loganite.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Ashley, what about you? Loganites or Wolfies?
I hate them both.
Of course, you're supposed to.
I kind of hate all fandom names. Like Whovian just makes me want to kick a door. Yeah, Loganite sounds like you're a cult member, and Wolverine is a dog from the dawn of time. So I think I got to go with the Loganites.
Really? Okay. All right, Matthew.
Well, here is something
we can't call him. We can't call him Jamesians because we don't want to confuse with the Ellen Jamesians.
Call him Howlets.
You call him Howlets, but
could
Howletrons.
You know what you should call them? Retcons. Ah, waka waka. Here's my thing. There is, on planet Earth, a finite number of phrases and words that will strike in me an almost superhuman fervor, a hatred that burns more passionately hot than the hottest of 1,000 white hot suns. And among those phrases is the term Wolvie.
Why?
It's the worst. Well, Chris Claremont has a tendency to do cutesy twee portmanteau language. And he has a real shorthand nature for language that makes everybody sound like a kindergartner with some sort of brain injury. And Wolvie is right up there. You know, Ashley, I want you to know I love you. I respect you. I consider you a dear friend. But if you call Wonder Woman 1D, I have that same sort of response where I just go, oh.
I think I like 1D because they do it in Superhero Girls, and I think it's cute.
See, and that I can give you. But Wolvie? Wolvie? Yeah. Wolvie. But here's the other thing.
Yeah.
Loganite sounds like a mineral that should scrape off the bottom of your shoe after a hard
I was walking the dog and stepped in a big pile of Loganite.
Loganite.
Honey, yeah. Bring me a stick.
And on that level, it's actually quite appropriate. And so I voted for Loganite, who I believe is going to appear in season 5 of Steven Universe as one of the crystal gems from Homeworld.
I went with Wolvies because if you go by Loganite, you're kind of revealing his secret identity.
He doesn't have a secret identity. He's been in 9 movies and never worn a mask once.
I went with Wolvies. That's okay, though. We have the great Nato who says, as one of the many spoilerites, I will have to go with Loganites. Yeah. Justin says, Loganites for sure. Wolvies sounds like it belongs to Twilight or maybe Underworld. Doug says, can't say I would want to be called any of those, but Loganites is a little bit less annoying. Lieutenant Floby, you people are evil. This poll is just cruel.
Yep, didn't even vote. Just came in to yell at us.
I like that one. Ray says, Wolvies, because the character identifies himself publicly as a superhero name, Wolverine is not real, is not his real name. It would be like Superman fans calling
Logan's
themselves
not his real name either.
I know, right? But that's what I said. We can't call him Jamesians. it would be like Superman fans calling themselves Clarkettes or Batman's the Wainers. Like the Wainers.
That's what I call Batman.
Wainers on the glass.
That's Wiener jokes waiting to happen.
That's a Wiener joke.
teacher about had a heart attack. They had their wainers on the glass, man.
funny thing is, even though it's 3-1 here, it's not so on the website.
It is 50-50. And until a few moments ago, it was actually a dead heat for me. I'm showing 49% saying Loganite, 51% saying a terrible word that will stick in my head if I say it.
The wainers.
Wolvie. Wolvie, Wolvie, Wolvie. Hi, my name is Wolvie. Yes,
Well, they, see, wieners are funny. But yes, the Wolvies have a very, very slight edge at this point in time. Sanity can still prevail. Majorspoilers.com, poll of the week.
That is definitely where you need to go. And while you are over there, if you're looking to buy something from Amazon, click on that Amazon link and just buy away. The nice thing about this Amazon affiliate program that we have with Amazon is it literally does not cost you anything extra to buy that that Wolverine plush doll that you've been wanting. It doesn't cost you anything extra to buy Wolverine on Blu-ray. It doesn't cost you extra to buy Wolverine pajamas. But every time you make a purchase, right, every time you make a purchase, and it doesn't matter what you purchase, actually it does matter what you purchase, because apparently we no longer get any money from the, what is it, Matthew, did I say the music sales, the music, digital music sales, we don't get anything
like
from
that. Yeah.
But anything else you buy, especially electronics, Amazon has to give, or they give us a portion. They don't have to, but I mean, they do give us a portion of that money.
They reward us for having the thing and the button, and it's a symbiotic relationship. We're remoras on their whale of life.
That's exactly right. So you can help out. Wait a minute. That makes it sound like bloodsuckers. You can help out us bloodsuckers.
Oh, remoras clean the teeth and
by heading over to majorspoilers.com, click on that Amazon link. And by buying away. In fact, you might want to go check out the new six. Well, not the new Six Gun, but the Six Gun Volume 3 that we're talking about this week.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I thought last volume was really good. And this one got better. In my opinion.
I have to admit, this is my favorite volume yet. Because I always love that point in the story where it's like, okay, we're going to split the party and we're going to do weird story related stuff. And we're going to kind of, the central conceit will always be there, but we're going to be off doing stuff over here for a minute. And then we'll bring the Hawksbill back together and everybody will have to go through some sort of time travel shenanigans. Mm-hmm.
I think I like this volume because it reveals a whole bunch about what's going on. Like, how did the general become immortal? Where did the guns come from? And Rodrigo, when Gord goes back home, we get all of that.
Yeah. There's been sort of this floating implication that Gord was tied up with the guns. But he never, I don't think he ever explicitly said how. And in this volume, we find out what exactly happened. And it's terrifying.
It's horrible.
Yeah. It
it's
turns horrible. Out his wife and children were sacrificed by the general's cult to make this happen, and then Gord took revenge on all of them in their sleep, except for the general and his wife, who also makes a very creepy appearance in this volume.
Yeah, she's horrible.
You know, I like the Gord story because he's literally being haunted by the ghosts of his past.
Including
creepy Vincent Price.
I'm here to tell you. He's come to terrorize y'all's neighborhood. That, I think, is the part that really works, because rather than frame something as a flashback or have, you know, Gord tell Becky a story, we actually see him return home and he gets riled up in some weird mystery that unravels all of this and shows us what happened. And it's really, really a great way to do all of that exposition and info dump. But it also makes it feel so real and so effective, because his emotion is clear throughout all of this. When he first comes back and you see the just that weird trepidation and fear, and then it starts getting really awful. And then I had to, you know, close my eyes and stop looking for a little bit because they did the thing with the axe.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We also get a really cool tale of, as this book opens, the last time they were on the train, that the Saints of Algernon or whatever were trying to take the general's.
I think it's Abraham.
Oh, Abraham.
Abraham.
Yes. Oh, Abraham and Solomon. Okay, right. So the Knights of Abraham are trying to take the general's body off to this monastery, and this issue picks up on the train, and they are being attacked by a bunch of risen dead and a mummy. And I got to say, Ashley, the Asher Cobb story was also really cool.
I liked him a lot. I could deal with him sticking around instead of maybe some other characters.
So give us a rundown of what the Asher Cobb story is.
So the Asher Cobb story is that he winds up teaming up with Gord because they run into each other at a fight. And he's a, I don't know if they explain why he's a mummy or if I just forgot. I just think it's like he's a mummy and move on.
Yeah, no, he was born deformed. He's kind of born like an elephant man deformities. And with his deformity comes these powers to see the future. And
That's right.
He was basically kept away from the community, and he fell in love with this girl, and this girl kind of fell in love with him, this girl Becky. And
but it's like convenient future sight. It's not like at will. It's like when they need him to, when they're like, oh, you should maybe let the Knights of Abraham or whatever they're called follow us because we're going to need to sacrifice them to another worldly being. Then that works. But he's sometimes called out by the other characters when it doesn't work and could have been useful.
Yeah. But Becky gets killed by, I'm guessing a pack of crazy peoples. And Asher can't deal with it. So he goes to these three witches and says, I never want to die.
The general.
Is it the general? No, because he goes to these three witches and they kill him.
Yeah, he sees. No, she gets killed. Like, she's going to get killed by the general's people the general is so evil that when Asher sees the future, the general is like, what are you looking at me for?
Oh, right. But he goes to these witches who turn him into a mummy, essentially, to where he's undead but dead. And
upon closer inspection, I didn't read book 3. I only read book 4.
Oh, well, so you're a month ahead.
What happens to him when he meets up with Gord? I was like, I don't remember any of this.
You're like 2 months ahead, Ashley.
Oh, well, useless.
No, that's good. No, that's good. Because now we know that everyone's still around in volume 4. Spoiler alert. But here's the part where what I like about Asher's story is it's kind of told in a sideshow carnival where, this carnival is carting around this 9-foot mummy and the kid's like, this isn't the real Asher Cobb. And the guy running the carnival is like, no, boy, let me tell you the real story of Asher Cobb. And so that's how we get that backstory. But the cool thing is that Gord's story and Asher's story collide when we find out more about, all six guns have the ability to bring about the end of the world or allows the bearer of the six guns to basically reshape the world in their way. And Asher wants Dexter to use the guns to bring back Becky or whatever the girl's name is, Rose or whatever. I don't remember her name.
Becky is our protagonist.
Becky is our protagonist.
That would
and
be the agonist, actually.
Gord is told that, hey, if you do what evil Vincent Price wants you to do, you could bring back your dead family. And I think that is going to build to something rather important, Matthew, as this series progresses. Or maybe in volume 4, Ashley. I don't know.
She's
probably
not telling.
Possibly.
Honestly, I will tell you what my favorite part of these issues is.
Okay.
Issue 1 has the fighty, and something happens, and Goober with the mustache.
Dexter.
What's his name? Dexter?
Drake, I'm sorry, Sinclair. We'll get these names right by volume 9.
Neville Sinclair. he basically, in the midst of the fight, something happens and Sinclair is off the table.
Mm-hmm.
And what it really does is it takes it to, by taking that, I don't think of him as the central character, but I think that linchpin big kind of everything seems to have been about him or round about him for 2 books now, taking him off the table, it really allows the other stories to breathe. And it really feels like something, I don't know, more unique. It's a different kind of engaging because this book has never been anything but, oh my God, what's going to happen now? Because I really, really love the scary Western, everything is crazy and also devils.
Yeah.
I'm really sort of fine with that. But I like the fact that by splitting them up and taking Sinclair out of the equation, I feel like I know Becky and Gord better.
Mm-hmm.
And, for his 12-second appearance, Bill John, a little better than I did coming out of those first couple of arcs. And that's the stuff that I live for in these stories is these side quest things or these moments where we are not in the middle of a terrible battle for our life right this second.
when the cat shows up in the light and you have to go and fetch an artifact for them.
Right. Stay away from the cat in the light. Don't go into the cat in the light, Carol Ann. But it also, and I don't remember if we've seen this before. Have we seen the guns as swords?
No.
Before,
last volume, they mentioned that the guns have been around for a long time, but have taken on different shapes. This is that was the other thing, is that we find a little bit more history, and that the Knights of Abraham or whoever had these before during the Crusades.
It's the Sword of Abraham and the Knights of Solomon.
Yeah. Those are the opposing forces.
The quote unquote the good guys.
Souls
are the sword.
Of the Bible guys.
Yes.
Right. the weapon of the Jesus reference.
Yes, the spear of destiny.
Really.
I do like that as well. And I think the thing that I like most about this volume is the last volume was Voodoo Magics. And the first volume was kind of like post-Civil War, kind of had a good, the bad, and the ugly feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
This one definitely has a Western feel, but it comes closest to Western zombie genre.
Is that really a genre?
I think it is. I call it. Mm-hmm. And so there. But I also like the Haunted Mansion aspect of it. From the Deep South side, but you also have this Western tale going on that has a crazy mummy running around it. It's just, yeah, I like that this is not just, we're only telling tales in the West, and it's always going to be set in the West. And so therefore everything that you're going to encounter is only going to be found in Western horror tales. And this thing, because they're traveling all over the country, we're able to explore some different themes and different types of horror tales in each of those regions. And that's what I like about this volume.
Gord's whole story with the weird antebellum mansion kept reminding me of The Shining.
Mm.
Because my brain is like, well,
with the axe.
Yeah.
It's just a little, the axe and the big empty rooms and the hallways and the weird ghost.
That one guy dressed up in a dog costume. Yeah. I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember that. Yeah. And the naked lady who's covered in seaweed, but throughout the whole thing, it always felt consistent. And that's what's great about this is a book that starts with what should be just a standard Western train sequence. You know, the great train robbery, one of the first movies ever made, I'm sure, had this whole bit into it. But then also zombies and then weird stuff and explosions and a mummy whispering in the guy's ear and stabbity, stabbity, crashity, boom. And I also liked, I really felt like there was a depth of emotion here that they hadn't quite touched on before. Becky's psychic discussion with her dad.
Yeah, it was really cool. Yeah.
Was incredibly touching. And, you know, Gord's realization that his dead family is in fact dead. Just heartrending stuff here, that the adventure part of it has been in the forefront for long enough that I kind of didn't expect that. And it really worked for me.
So this is the third volume, and by this time, 12 issues, what is this? Covers issues 12 through 17 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
By this time, I would be like, okay, I'm starting to feel a little bit of the drain on this. But this actually increased the speed for me. This is like stoke the fire to where I want to read more and more and more and more right now.
Stoke the fire.
Yeah. To use a train metaphor there.
I'm a fire stoker. No, wait. Sorry.
Rodrigo, are you still feeling the same way after reading this volume?
Yeah, I think so. I'm pretty happy when we go into a new six gun volume. Maybe it's just the familiarity of it now, but I mean, it hasn't disappointed me yet. So
yeah,
I'm pretty interested to see what happens next.
So what are your final thoughts on this then, Rodrigo, for this volume three?
Volume three is a good continuation of what's happening. It does split the party and is therefore kind of disjointed. So if you'd like to see the plot advanced, this is not the volume for you. In fact, the plot is kind of ground to a screeching halt. But you get a lot of character moments. So if you wanted to learn more about each individual character, except for Sinclair, who kind of gets taken out, then this is the volume for you.
Matthew, final thoughts from you.
As someone who read The Sandman in trade paperbacks and will still tell you that the best Sandman trade paperback is World's End, where all the plot just comes to a screaming halt for like 22 issues while they tell cool side stories and stories within stories.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you that this is my favorite volume of this well-done, never had a false start moment book for me. So I feel like The Sixth Gun has been solid every time we've read it.
Yeah.
This is my favorite. And this, I think, is the one that's grabbed me the hardest in terms of these are people, real people, only, you know, magic and ghosts and guns, which may be immortal.
Mm-hmm. I really suggest going out and getting this volume. I've act all three of the volumes, but in the three volumes that we've read, this is definitely my favorite to date. And it just keeps getting better. And if you're wondering why Colin Bunn is all over everything at Marvel, you can see why. It's here in The Sixth Gun. It's really good. The art is fantastic. It's a solid package. And I say go pick it up, and I cannot wait for volume four. Ashley, give us a preview of what we can expect in volume four.
Lots of cool Canadian mythology that you didn't think you were going to get here.
Oh, really? Now I'm super excited. And I cannot wait until we review this in an upcoming episode. It looks like the next Sixth Gun will be in May.
I was super excited to talk about it.
Well, we will talk again in May. Until then, thank you, Matthew, Rodrigo, and Ashley for joining me again this week. And thank you, all of our dear listeners from around the world, for being a part of the Major Spoilers experience. We couldn't do it without you. We will be back next week because we know that you love comics and we do too. And we will talk with you soon.
Stop talking about comic books or I'll kill you. I don't care if the Hulk could defeat the Man of Steel. I'm gonna rearrange your things. Rogers Shield. I just couldn't care less if they bring back Kraven. And I don't care if Spider-Man's a clone. Stop spending all our cash on back issues of The Flash. Or I swear to God, you're gonna spend your twilight years alone.
This podcast is copyright 2017 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.